The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Avery Lewis from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as TRRS. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, To Be Loved, in tribute to the great American writer, a best-selling author, poet, and playwright, recalls lessons learned when Toni Morrison took a seat at her table. Way back in 1978, I had published one slim volume of poetry and not much else. I had been married for almost 10 years, during which I held down a series of jobs that left me no time to see if there were any more poems forthcoming or if my first book would also be my last. The thought that I might not really be a writer terrified me. I had never wanted to be anything else, but I couldn't seem to balance the increasingly complicated demands of being a wife and mother with the solitary explorations of my own imagination, where those elusive poems might be found. Then one night, my husband came home and announced that we were having guests for dinner. Pulling together a last-minute dinner party was the last thing on my mind. I was on the verge of inquiring whether he had taken leave of his senses when he casually dropped the names of our unexpected visitors. Toni Morrison is in town, he said, and Toni Cade Bombera wants you to meet her. Toni Cade Bombera was already a friend whose work I greatly admired, but Toni Morrison was another matter altogether. I had consumed The Bluest Eye in one gulp and then turned back to page one and read it again to be sure I hadn't missed anything. When Sula appeared, I devoured it twice, three times, maybe four. This would become my habit with her books. Gobble them up fast and then go back to pore over every beautifully written page, savor each carefully crafted character. Toni Morrison's work will do that to you, turn you inside out and upside down, and then send you back up the road to meet yourself on the return trip. She was deeply committed to telling the stories in which we found ourselves as complex and contradictory as we knew ourselves to be. Her characters were hard to know, and sometimes even harder to love. But we loved them anyway. We couldn't help it, as she went on to publish books that won every award, including the Nobel Prize, a Pulitzer Prize, and an American Book Award. We allowed the world to embrace her, but in our hearts, we knew she had belonged to us first. To say I was awed by her work wouldn't have been an understatement. She didn't think or write like anybody else, and now she was coming to dinner at my house, and I was terrified. Not talking with her, but of what I could prepare for her to eat. I remember how I felt opening the door as she and Toni Cade Bombera stood on my porch laughing together like the old friends they were. I stared at them with such longing to be a part of their sisterhood that it was almost a physical pain. As I read the tributes that poured in after she joined the ancestors, I thought about that long ago night when she showed up at my door. I wish I could recall the conversation around the table, but mostly what I remember is that I was so nervous. I burned the chicken, although she was too polite to mention it, as I listened to this amazing writer talking about how hard she worked to get the words on paper, riding on the train to those other jobs she took to keep body and soul together. juggling family and work the same way I was trying to do. I realized I would never be a great cook, but if I worked as hard as she did, I might be a writer after all. There is no greater gift she could have given me, and for that I am forever grateful. Award-winning novelist, poet, and playwright Pearl Klieg, who lives in Atlanta, wrote that article. Bookshelf Bliss, from a passionate page turner set across the pond to a celebrity self-help read that encourages us to reevaluate inner and outer beauty, this month's picks are sure to satisfy. Conversation starter. What happens when we have to deal with the unfamiliar? That's the question posed by best-selling author Malcolm Gladwell in Talking to Strangers. In his first book in 6 years, Gladwell, who also hosts the Revisionist History podcast, examines public scandals, pop culture, and heartbreaking events such as the death of Sandra Bland. Mama Got Her Groove Back, contemporary romance's hot new voice, Jasmine Guillory, is back with Royal Holiday. This delightful yarn, inspired by Meghan Markle's mother, Doria Ragland, whisked readers away to England, where American Vivian Forrest embarks on a fun fling with suave Brit Malcolm Hudson during the Christmas season. Allen Love, tell the girl to go find her picking rightful papa and stop call George Dane. Jamaican patois is just part of what animates A Tall History of Sugar. My apologies if I said that wrong. A Tall History of Sugar by Howard University professor Cordella Forbes, who centers her memorable novel around a folktale of soulmates Moshe Fisher and Ariane Christie. An adult Ariane narrates the mysterious Caribbean fantasy. Critical observations. Acclaimed writer Sadie Smith presents her first short story collection in Grand Union through 11 new works and some of her best loved features from The New Yorker and elsewhere. Smith unpacks cultural nuances as she dives into topics ranging from first love to depression, delivering something for everyone. Laugh Out Loud, comedian Akilah Hughes makes her literary debut in Obviously Stories from My Timeline. In this essay collection, the YouTuber details her journey from a rural town in Kentucky to Brooklyn and shares personal anecdotes about dealing with racism, struggling, and weight issues, and navigating Hollywood. The author spotlight section. In her new offering, More Than Pretty, Doing the Soul Work That Uncovers Your True Beauty, Grammy-winning gospel singer, BET Sunday Best judge, and nationally syndicated radio host Erica Campbell explores an array of issues, from social media and self-esteem to colorism and infidelity. Far from being preachy, Campbell is candid about some of the challenges she's faced, including growing up on welfare, sharing a bathroom and a bedroom with 5 sisters, and living through her parents getting divorced and remarried 3 times. Writing this was so therapeutic for me, the Los Angeles native reveals. I remember where I was emotionally as a young girl. Reliving some major mistakes and heartbreaks was crazy. But the crazy things have had a purpose. The married mother of 3 hoped More Than Pretty helps others move past their own pain to live their best lives. I pray this book is a tool for women to start asking necessary questions. Knowing why we feel certain emotions is important. Doing soul work helps you understand why you feel a certain way, whether it's frustration, disappointment, anger, or even good emotions like joy, love, and happiness. Knowing is key. Now I am reading from the views section, and the name of this article is 10 Things We Are Talking About. Number 1, a queen with kinks. Exclusive beauty idols inch closer to their demise every time a woman with coils takes the top crown. For Miss Tunzi, the newly minted Miss South Africa, mainstream's departure from traditionally white beauty standards is long overdue. As the first person from her native country to hold the title while sporting a short natural hairstyle, Tunzi is making it her mission to promote diversity, including inclusion and representation. Through my win, I hope I have inspired people to be themselves at all times, to never compromise their identities, and to insert themselves into spaces where they feel that people like them do not belong, the 25-year-old public relations grad said during her acceptance speech. Number 2, burden-free books. According to Cengage poll, 85% of students view purchasing textbooks as a financial stressor. That's why the tech education company is partnering with the United Negro College Fund to alleviate that concern for 1,000 HBCU students. The subscription service, dubbed Netflix for Textbooks, offers unlimited access to course materials. Go to scholarships.uncf.org after November 4th to submit application for spring 2020. Once again, that website is scholarships.uncf.org. Number 3, history retold. The American narrative received a new treatment in the 1619 Project, a special issue of the New York Times Magazine. Spearheaded by investigative journalism Nicole Hannah Jones, the initiative tells the 400-year story of this country through the lens of contemporary Black reporters, novelists, artists, photographers, and historians. This timeline is recalibrated to take into consideration America's original sin, from the arrival of enslaved Africans to the present day. Number 4, the hard truth. Police violence is a public health issue. That's according to a new study by researchers from Rutgers University, the University of Michigan, and Washington University in St. Louis. Using verified data on police killings from 2013 to 2018, the analysts found that roughly one in every 1,000 Black men will die at the hands of law enforcement, and African Americans as a whole are 2.5 times more likely to have fatal interactions with cops compared with white people. Number 5, the power of the block. Experts predict that women will be central to the outcome of the 2020 presidential race, according to the U.S. Census Bureau and a study titled Ahead of the Majority, for grounding women of color, 55% of eligible Black women cast votes during the 2018 midterms, which is above the national average. This leads analysts to believe that any candidate who wants to win the White House must demonstrate a commitment to our concerns. The function of freedom is to free someone else. This is a quote by Toni Morrison. Number 7, pushing good health. In the United States, African Americans are twice as likely as whites to develop type 2 diabetes, which can have fatal complications. The Sugar Project, a Chicago-based organization founded by Natalie Pauls, hopes to change this statistic by opening up a dialogue within the Black community about the disease through education and research. The goal is to show diabetics how to manage their care. Number 8, Richmond on the radar. Looking for a fall getaway? Richmond, Virginia may be the place you didn't know you needed to visit. This summer, its tourism board, along with more than 20 community leaders, launched BLK RVA to promote African American travel to the destination. The campaign highlights the Black experience in the city by focusing on arts, entertainment, food and drink, and community and history. Number 9, a rich acquisition. More than 4 million photographs and 10,000 hours of video and audio detailing the life of Blacks in America are now in the hands of the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, the Getty Research Institute, and other cultural institutions. The deal was brokered between the owner of this media, Johnson Publishing, the former publisher of Ebony and Jet magazines, and 4 foundations for $30 million. Number 10, passing the time. Move over, Sudoku. Author LaToya Nicole has engineered a fun new way to relax and release while you stimulate your mind. ColorXO is a coloring app with a slew of melanin-rich photos that allow users to paint by numbers. Find it in the App Store and Google Play. Okay, we're going to move along to our next article, which is titled License to Braid, Twisting the Dream. For natural hair braiders across the country, requirements for licensing have made the American dream harder to achieve. Throughout the United States, many of those who move nimble fingers through the texture of Black hair have been in an ongoing battle to practice their craft freely. Though the tradition of hair braiding predates the arrival of Africans on American shores, legislation from New Jersey to Nevada threatened the profession. Today, largely due to the unwavering efforts of Black women and the attorneys and advocates who believe in their cause, states whose licensing requirements once involved hours of unnecessary and expensive beauty school instruction have replaced their heavy-handed demands with less intrusive government regulations, and yet the fight is not over. Forcing someone to go to cosmetology school for a year to spend upwards of $20,000 to learn something you're not going to do is overly burdensome, asserts Pamela Farrell, co-owner of DC's Cornrows and Company. The longtime entrepreneur took up natural hair styling as a career in the late 70s after being fired from her job for wearing braids. Today, she considers herself a pioneer in the natural hair care field and leads her voice to a growing movement that is focused on removing unreasonable requirements for licensing for natural hair braiders. Around 1982, just 2 years after Farrell opened her salon with husband Talib Din Udah, the couple found themselves in a legal battle with the district's Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs in a move that Farrell views as an attempt to stop competition. They were told to shut down their business because they lacked the proper training and permissions to operate. Farrell and her husband disagreed, and their defiance sparked a decade-long campaign of what they considered to be constant harassment. The repeated threats of closure, citations, and fines came to an end only after the two decided to sue the District of Columbia, requesting that their business be granted a limited license. With help from the Institute of Justice, a public interest law firm, they prevailed, winning the right for braiders in the nation's capital to operate based on a specialty natural hair license that is different from those regularly issued by cosmetology schools. D.C.'s compromise predates New Jersey's very similar decision in 2018 to curtail a 1,200-hour curriculum that cost $17,000 in favor of a 40- to 50-hour specialty license for those making a living as hairdressers for natural styles. There is no reason hair braiders should be required to spend thousands of dollars and thousands of hours on coursework completely unrelated to what they have been given a gift to do, says Assemblywoman Angela V. McKnight, Democrat, co-sponsor of the Garden State Successful Hair Braiding Bill. This just doesn't add up, and it presents a barrier to business ownership for many African American and African immigrant women who earn a living for their families by braiding hair. McKnight and her co-sponsors, Assemblywoman Spate and Assemblyman Arthur Barclay, worked with her braiders across the state to make the measure possible. They enlisted the help of Black women like Bridget Inzali, who upon relocating from France to the United States, identified a need in her community and brought the natural hair braiding customs of her native Cameroon to the suburbs of South Jersey. When I moved here with my family, there were no braiding salons in the area, recalls the owner of African American Braidings in Blackwood. As a business person, I realized that a lot of potential customers, especially African Americans, had to go all the way to New York City, Philadelphia, or even Maryland just to have their hair braided. So I decided to open a salon that specialized in cultural hairstyles because I grew up braiding. In Zali, much like Pharrell, was met with opposition soon after her salon doors opened in 2001. The pushback moved her to become an advocate for less stringent regulations. I wrote to everybody, Inzali says. I wrote to the governor. I wrote to the lieutenant governor. I wrote to the state board and the attorney general. I said, I want help. Eventually, the entrepreneur was able to voice her concerns to then New Jersey Governor Chris Christie at a breakfast for minority business owners. Although nothing happened immediately, she continued writing letters. A few years later, Inzali was able to testify in front of the state's Red Tape Review Commission, a group of lawmakers and private sector members tasked was studying New Jersey's regulation. Thereafter, she appeared before a committee of New Jersey legislatures, and her testimony helped frame what would become the state's newly adopted hair braiding law. At that hearing, Inzali was joined by an activist from the same law firm that helped Pharrell and her husband win their case in D.C. years earlier. IJ has been engaged in a 25-year-plus collaboration with natural hair braiders across the nation who argue their right to practice safe, chemical-free styling without red tape often placed on them as professionals. Currently, 43 states and the District of Columbia either have no license requirements or a license specific to those who craft these styles. Attorneys and activists from the firm have successfully pushed for a charge in cosmetology laws for hairstylists who create natural looks in 22 of those states. most of the cosmetology laws, especially at the time we first started challenging them, were quite old, notes Paul Aveler, managing attorney at IJ's Arizona office. DC's cosmetology laws had been adopted in 1938 and hadn't really been amended since then. Whether it was racism or ignorance, I doubt very much that people in DC in 1938 were thinking a lot about natural hair. Avlar has seen many similar situations while fighting on behalf of braiders, including women and men who use their hands and simple tools to create locks, twist, and sew-in extensions without cutting hair or using dangerous chemicals. Often, the state legislation predates the recognition of natural hair braiding as a profession. This was the case in Mississippi, where Melanie Armstrong was, naturally speaking, a Tupelo-based salon that specializes in sister locks, twist, and other natural styles. But when she first had the idea to start her business, she called the State Board of Cosmetology to determine the next steps in getting it off the ground. That's when she was told that in order to practice professionally, she would have to obtain a cosmetology license. I thought, okay, I'm going to learn a lot about hair, Armstrong remembers. But when she dug deeper into what the curriculum actually entailed, she realized her hair braiding was not included. After consulting with an attorney, she reluctantly decided to sue the state of Mississippi. I'm trying to have a business, she recalls. I'm just trying to make an honest living. And now I'm having to sue people. And not just sue people, but sue state agencies. I remember thinking, I'm not even originally from this state, and I'm coming in and I'm making trouble. By 2005, the good trouble Armstrong created paved the way for Mississippi to differentiate natural hair braiding from cosmetology, removing the need for braiders to obtain a specific license to run their business. We have run out of time for today's episode of Ebony. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avery Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, previously TRRS. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.